From VOA, the Science Edition of Press Conference USA. Here's your host, Rick Pantaleo.
Hi, I'm Rick Pantaleo. Welcome to the Science Edition of Press Conference USA. According to the American Museum of Natural History in New York, scientists estimate that at least 99.9% of all species of plants and animals that ever lived on Earth are now extinct. The UN's International Union for Conservation of Nature monitors the health of the world's biodiversity and maintains a red list of species that are threatened. According to their website, out of the 150,388 species they have assessed, 42,100 species are currently in danger of extinction. To raise awareness of their plight, Endangered Species Day is marked annually on the third Friday of May. This year, that was May 19th, which was also the 50th anniversary of the U.S. Endangered Species Act. It is a federal government law that provides for the conservation of threatened or endangered plants and animals and their native habitats here in the United States. Today I have two wonderful guests joining me via Zoom. One is joining me for the first half of our program and the other in our second half. They are Sarah Starman, the Director of Endangered Species Day with the Endangered Species Coalition, who will be with us in our second segment, and Lee Henry, Director of Wildlife Policy and Wildlife Conservation at the World Wildlife Fund, who joins me in this first segment. Lee Henry, what does the term endangered species mean to you?
So it means a few different things to me, depending on the context in which I'm thinking. So first and foremost, it means that it is a plant or animal that is in danger of extinction, which means that any endangered species is, we could lose it forever and there's no getting back. So I think that's the first thing I think about is the prospective loss of a species from our planet. But aside from that, there are also legal implications. So if you're thinking in the context of the U.S. Endangered Species Act, then an endangered species is legally one that's in danger of extinction throughout all or a portion of its range. But also the Endangered Species Act provides legal protection to endangered and threatened species. So you can look at the term endangered in a few different ways. One is just purely from a biological perspective, and the other is from more of a legal perspective.
So when we're talking endangered species, we are talking about animal and plant species.
Absolutely, yes.
Why should we care about saving endangered species?
Well, the first thing I'll say is every animal and plant has a role in its ecosystem. And we don't even fully understand yet the role that all of these species play. So when you pull one of those species out of an ecosystem through extinction, or even when they're endangered and their role lessens, it can throw the whole thing off balance and have much broader implications than just the loss of a species. So when we're talking about an endangered species, we're also talking about conserving the habitat on which it depends and the ecosystem in which it lives. And that can have much broader benefits than, say, if we're talking about a tiger. The forest where the tiger lives is conserved. Communities around that can benefit from that forest through livelihoods, water resources, clean water, flood mitigation, carbon sequestration. So really the benefits go beyond the animal itself. But aside from that, I would say, again, if you take the tiger as an example, I don't think I'm alone in not wanting to live in a world where tigers no longer exist. And I certainly don't want that for my children. The species have value in themselves, but also value in the role they play in our ecosystem and ensuring balance with nature.
Lee, a combination of questions here. The extinction of species has been going on since the beginning of time. Isn't this what Charles Darwin called natural selection? And what is different now? And are there other elements at play that we should be concerned about?
Yeah, absolutely. We know extinctions happen in nature, but now we're seeing extinctions happen at a rate anywhere from 100 to 1,000 times higher than nature intended. And we don't always even know when a species is lost because we haven't even discovered them all yet. So what's happening now is that through our own actions, through the actions of humankind, we're losing species at a more rapid rate. And there are a lot of reasons for that. One is climate change, which everybody hears about, which is human induced, and the effects that that has on ecosystems and food sources for species, but also direct threats. So if we're talking about rhinos and elephants, they're poached for trade in their horns and ivory tusks. So that's a direct threat from man. There's also habitat loss when we convert forests and other lands for purposes like agriculture and ranching or oil palm plantations. And that moves species into much smaller and smaller areas in which they can to live, which makes surviving much more difficult. So there's a whole raft and variety of threats posed by humans, but we are definitely driving the rate of decline. And what we've seen just in my lifetime since 1970 is a 69% decline in species. So we're losing our natural biodiversity at an incredibly rapid rate.
So you're talking about complete extinction then?
Yes. And, 69% of species have gone extinct since 1970.
You mentioned human-caused extinctions. What about things such as natural events and being endangered from natural predators and that causing extinction? Is that taken into consideration?
Sure. There are natural causes, not usually a predator-prey relationship, but there are diseases. If there can be a disease outbreak that can cause an extinction of a species, there are sometimes unknown factors that aren't well understood. Certainly in the marine environment, we see unusual mortality events with whales. They don't usually cause extinction, but there's a lot we still don't understand.
Which animals, fish, and plants do you think are most endangered?
WWF released our Living Planet report, the most recent edition of it in 2022. And according to that research and the data we have, we know that freshwater species have been the hardest hit. I mentioned earlier that overall we've seen a decline in 69% in species across the board since 1970, but in freshwater species, it's over 80%. So a lot of what we see and what we note in the past has been terrestrial species, and there's still a lot of unknowns with freshwater and marine species. Whales and dolphins and porpoises have some of the most critically endangered populations right now. We can look at the vaquita in the Gulf of California and Mexico, which is the world's smallest porpoise. And there are less than 10 of those animals estimated to exist today. And we can go from there to the North Atlantic right whale, just off the east coast of the US and Canada, which sits at around 350 individuals left. So both of those species are critically endangered, but it can run the gamut. There are terrestrial species as well that are critically endangered, like the black-footed ferret in the northern Great Plains of the U.S.
As you mentioned, Lee, the list of endangered species is growing at an alarming rate. What do you think this says about humankind?
I think it says that we haven't really caught up with the information that we have. We understand, and those of us who work on these issues on a daily basis understand, that the dual crises of biodiversity loss and climate change are having rapid impacts on our planet. And we have to have a healthy planet to survive. We can't survive as a species without nature. But we're still letting the short-term gains outweigh the long-term benefits of the decisions we make. And our politics and our laws and our values really need to catch up with the science before it's too late.
I know we want to save as many endangered species as we can, but to you, which endangered species would you least like to see disappear?
I could take that from two perspectives. One is from more of a scientific perspective. And in that sense, I'd always say the apex predators and the ones at the top of the food chain, because the loss of those, I think, has the greatest impact on an ecosystem. But I'm going to take that question from a personal perspective and talk about a species that I just mentioned, and that's the vaquita porpoise in the Gulf of Mexico. It's the world's smallest porpoise. There are less than 10 left. It lives in a restricted area in the northern Gulf of California, and we know how to save this species, It is going extinct due to one threat, and that is illegal fishing. They get caught in illegal gill nets that are set for a fish that's in high demand, and it's just a matter of getting the nets out of the water in this very small area. And yet, after 20 years and a lot of hard work by a lot of very committed people, we just still have not been able to reverse that trend. So for me, that's a species that I hold very close to my heart, and that's the one I really don't want to see go.
Lynn, do you think there's any possibility of cutting down the list of endangered species? And if so, what would need to be done?
Absolutely. We've done it in the past. We've seen success stories, whether through listing under the Endangered Species Act or other efforts. I think the common thread where we have seen species recover is government commitment and commitment of sufficient resources. So in the U.S., we could look at the bald eagle as a success story. Our national emblem, our national species, was endangered mainly due to the pesticide DDT. It was listed on the Endangered Species Act. DDT was banned, and now bald eagles are thriving. At the time it was listed, there were about 417 breeding pairs in 1963, and now we have almost 10,000 breeding pairs of bald eagles in the U.S., so it's a massive success story. We've seen similar with gray whales and humpback whales around the United States. They were decimated by commercial whaling. An international commercial whaling ban was put into place in the 1980s, and we've seen those species recover as well. So where governments have significant political will to enforce laws that are put into place to protect species, and where critically they adequately resource the actions needed to recover a species, we can see success.
Along with what you just mentioned, how is the international community working to protect endangered species?
At the international level, we see some efforts focused around international law, but also international commitment. So you can look to the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species, which is an international treaty with over 180 government members. And what CITES does is looks to either ban international trade or regulate international trade in plants and animals where that trade poses a threat to their continued survival. So there's that kind of legal framework on how the international community can avoid extinction of a species. On the other side, you could look at in 2010, we had 13 Tiger Range state governments come together to commit to doubling the number of wild tigers by 2022. And while we are still facing a crisis of tiger extinctions in Southeast Asia, we've seen governments achieve that goal. Russia and Nepal have almost tripled their tiger populations during that time, and Bhutan has doubled theirs. So where you have real government commitment to enforce laws and devote adequate resources to conservation, you can see success. And we've seen governments do this time and time again. But we also see where governments aren't doing what they need to. So trying to make sure that we bring all governments across the globe along to be sure that we can avert this biodiversity loss and biodiversity crisis is critical.
Lee, I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to talk about endangered species, the work of the World Wildlife Fund, and sharing your insights with us. Thank you again.
Absolutely. I appreciate it, Rick. Thank you so much.
That was Lee Henry, Director of Wildlife Policy and Wildlife Conservation at the World Wildlife Fund. Let's take a break now. You're listening to the Science Edition of Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. I'm Rick Pantaleo. I'd like to remind you that Press Conference USA is available for free download at voanews.com/PCUSA. You can also find our show on Apple Podcasts and other podcast platforms. Be sure to connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel VOA or Twitter at Carol_Castiel. Now let's get back to the Science Edition of Press Conference USA. Today, we're talking about the world's endangered species and efforts that are being made to protect them. My guest in this segment is Sarah Starman, the Director of Endangered Species Day with the Endangered Species Coalition. Sarah, can you please tell us about Endangered Species Day that was celebrated on May 19th?
So Endangered Species Day's purpose is to engage the public around the world, but more particularly in the U.S., in celebrating endangered species and learning about endangered species and in taking action to protect endangered species. And that has been happening, again, since 2006, so for the past 18 years. I would say that it's been very successful. Typically on Endangered Species Day, there's more than 100 events held around the world to engage people in educational activities or service activities such as webinars or talks at schools or libraries, bird walks, educational hikes, guided tours, and often service activities like beach cleanups, trash pickups, and things like that. So it's a day that tends to engage between thousands and millions of people around the world in learning about these issues and in taking action to protect wildlife in their local communities. And since that's the purpose, I would say it's been a pretty big success.
Sarah, what did the Endangered Species Coalition offer to mark Endangered Species Day?
We offer a variety of ways for people to participate, either from home or at in-person events. So first and foremost, we always hold some national events that people can participate in from around the country or around the world. This year, we hosted a trivia event where people played trivia about large carnivore species that included trivia about grizzly bears, orca whales, and gray wolves, which are some of the most iconic and biologically important large carnivores in the U.S. We also did a nationwide chalk art contest where people of all ages around the world could draw chalk art of threatened and endangered species and then submit those pictures to us on Instagram in order to win prizes and to raise awareness through the arts of endangered species issues. And then also what we do is we had a map that people could submit local events to. And we had between about 75 and 90 events around the world that people could find in their local area by going to that map and finding something to participate in their local community. And again, that's things like bird walks, pollinator garden plantings, film screenings, everything ranging from service to education to action.
From what we've talked about so far, Sarah, Endangered Species Day was marked this year on May 19th. And this was a special year because it coincided with the 50th anniversary of the U.S. Endangered Species Act.
Yes, exactly. It's a really, really special year. The 50th anniversary is such a huge milestone in conservation. So for anyone who doesn't know, the Endangered Species Act was passed unanimously by the United States Senate in 1973. And it's just a landmark piece of conservation legislation that kind of cemented our country's commitment to protecting fish, plants, and wildlife and the places they call home. It's been an incredibly successful piece of conservation legislation that's actually become a model for conservation around the world. And this year, 2023, is the 50th anniversary since it passed in 1973. And that has been celebrated and will continue being celebrated all year. So when Endangered Species Day happened on May 19th, we made the theme this year celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Endangered Species Act. So some years for Endangered Species Day, we pick a theme, and this year it just made sense to kind of roll the 50th anniversary celebrations into Endangered Species Day. And what that looked like essentially was a lot of the special events were related to the 50th anniversary. A lot of the social media posts and news stories about Endangered Species Day also talked about the 50th anniversary. And generally, many of just the activities and communications were reminding people how important the Endangered Species Act is and just helping people understand this piece of legislation and the role that it's played in protecting our nation's wildlife for almost half a century.
Speaking of the Endangered Species Protection Act of 1973, can you tell us what does this law entail?
The Endangered Species Act, at the most basic level, it lays out criteria for determining whether or not a species is threatened or endangered. And to kind of back up there, actually, an endangered species is a species that is at risk of extinction. The way that scientists and policymakers determine if a species is at risk of extinction varies country by country around the world. But the Endangered Species Act is the United States way of determining whether a species is threatened or endangered. And then also the Endangered Species Act lays out some protective measures that need to be taken or applied when a species is found to be threatened. So it's kind of a two-part process, figuring out whether or not a species is in trouble and then setting out guidelines for how to help that species recover if it is. And an endangered species, according to the Endangered Species Act, is a species that is in danger of extinction throughout all or a significant portion of its range. So its range is the habitat that is suitable for it. So that is how the Endangered Species Act defines a species.
What kind of activities does the ESA prohibit from its citizens of the U.S.?
It really depends on the species, on the habitat, and on the particular case. But typically, it might protect a species from being harvested or commercially exploited. It might, you know, protect a species habitat so you can't, like, potentially develop or encroach upon certain critical habitats for a species. And it just provides them, again, with that extra layer of protection. So also our government agencies, like the Fish and Wildlife Service in particular, will actually take projects on to recover that species. So restoring the habitat, safeguarding the population on the road to recovery, things like that.
I understand that the Endangered Species Act itself at times has also become endangered itself and has been attacked for years with political efforts to either weaken or repeal it entirely. Can you tell us about some of the challenges the ESA has faced over the years, and is it currently under threat?
This is a really important issue to talk about. What is very interesting about the Endangered Species Act is it's one of the most popular pieces of conservation legislation and of legislation, period, in the country. When we do polling of the public, we see that the Endangered Species Act has broad bipartisan support. So across political parties in the U.S., there's, you know, lots of people who are Democrats or on the left who support it, lots of people who are conservative or Republican who support it. And so we see that it's very popular at the public level, which is very interesting because at the same time, we see lots of politicians attacking the Endangered Species Act and trying to weaken it or do things that would, you know, undermine the core protections that it provides for species. In particular, between 2016 and 2020, under the Trump administration, we saw a lot of attacks on the act. We saw a series of rules that the Trump administration released that would have significantly weakened the act. And then we kind of had to fight those off. Conservation nonprofits had to fight off those attacks with a combination of like conservation litigation, with advocacy, with lobbying, with, you know, engaging the public in protecting the act. And luckily, we were able to protect it from most of those things. And this kind of continues to happen. There's also kind of package of bills in the House of Representatives right now that would undermine or weaken the act or undermine protections for specific species. So it's one of those things where even though the public is very popular, sometimes our elected officials and political leaders try to gain a little bit of power or leverage or political momentum by attacking it, even though that's not, doesn't tend to be, you know, what is in the best interest of the public or even what the public wants. So we do have to kind of continually engage in the political process in order to protect and safeguard this really important piece of conservation legislation.
I'm curious, what are some of the reasons why politicians want to do this, want to weaken or repeal the Endangered Species Act?
Of course, it's always very difficult to speak to the motivations of someone else. I'm not in these politicians' heads. I'm not in their inner meetings or like in their inner circles. But essentially, I think that often these politicians are just pursuing kind of an anti-wildlife agenda where they are not, you know, making protecting wildlife and making conservation a priority. And then they think that they can gain some kind of political capital or potentially advance one of their other interests by weakening wildlife protections or potentially cater to some of their more like extreme donors. For example, let's say with a particular species issue, like a small segment of the population is interested in weakening protections for that species, and that segment of the population donates a lot to a particular candidate, the candidate might then become more interested in that issue, if that makes sense.
How successful has the Act been in preserving species over the last 50 years? Can you cite some success stories that are the result of the protections offered by the ESA?
Yeah. So the great news about the Endangered Species Act is that it's actually been 99% effective over the course of its history. So 99% of the species who have been listed as threatened or endangered have been saved from extinction. That includes species like the humpback whale, the grizzly bear, the bald eagle, and some other iconic species, along with protecting 99% of the species that have been listed from extinction. It's also helped 90% of species recover faster than expected, so recover faster than they would have without the act. So we know that it's very successful. There's actually currently more than 2,000 species of plants and animals that are threatened and endangered in our country that are being protected by the act. So it's just one of those things that it's protecting thousands of species from the tiniest insects and like plants you've never even heard of to some of our most iconic species like wolves and grizzly bears and the thing and bald eagles and some of these species that we associate with the American wilderness and our America's wild heritage. So it's been very successful and it's really important.
Let's talk about your organization a little bit, the Endangered Species Coalition. How does your organization help protect endangered species? What is the mission and goals of your organization?
Thank you for asking that. So I work for the Endangered Species Coalition, and basically we are a group that works to confront the threats to endangered species and to wildlife. So what we do is we kind of convene a group of other wildlife nonprofits and community groups across the country in order to restore biodiversity and like ensure that its benefits are shared equitably by all communities across the U.S. We really focus on collaboration. So bringing together more than 400 conservation, community, humane, science, faith, sporting, and other groups across the country in order to work together, along with more than 600,000 individual citizens in the U.S. And we bring everyone together in order to run grassroots campaigns, do public education, and do advocacy to protect fragile, threatened, and endangered species and guide them along the road to recovery.
Sarah, I read on your website that your organization's efforts are focused on stopping human-caused extinction of at-risk species. How much of what is on the endangered species list is caused by humans versus those that are caused by other species, environmental and climate change issues, and frankly, just natural selection?
I really like that question because I think the science around what's happening right now is both really interesting and very disturbing. So what we know is that we're in something called a sixth mass extinction event. So there's always a background rate of species going extinct. Throughout all of the world's history, sometimes species die out, new species evolve. So we're constantly seeing, you know, a background rate of species going extinct, where that's kind of just part of the normal process of evolution and of just how like biological ecosystems function. What we're seeing right now is that extinctions are happening at hundreds of times the normal background rate. So we're seeing massive die-offs that are not part of kind of the more natural process of extinction and evolution, but actually die-offs that are at an alarmingly high rate directly caused by human intervention and human activity.
I hate to say this, Sarah, but we're out of time, and I want to thank you very much for joining us today and sharing your wonderful insights with us.
Thanks so much for having me, Rick. It was great to talk a little bit about, Endangered Species Act, the Endangered Species Day, and just these issues generally and why biodiversity is so important and critical.
That was Sarah Starman, the Director of Endangered Species Day with the Endangered Species Coalition. I'd like to thank her and Lee Henry, Director of Wildlife Policy and Wildlife Conservation at the World Wildlife Fund, who was my guest in the first segment of the show. Lee and Sarah joined me today via Zoom. And that's all the time we have for this science edition of Press Conference USA. Thanks for listening. This is Rick Pantaleo reminding you to be sure to join Carol Castiel next week for another Press Conference USA on The Voice of America.